Wouldn't it be great if three idiots picked apart each episode of your favorite podcast?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if we discuss the newest episode, ongoing theories, and predictions for what comes next?
We do that. Wouldn't it be great if they didn't ruin the podcast at all and kept everything spoiler-free?
We don't do that. You've been warned.
Welcome to We Do That, a fan cast of The Adventure Zone. I'm your co-host, Chris.
And I'm your co-host, Jake Cooler Ice.
And I'm your other co-host, Colin.
This week's episode, Amnesty, Episode 3.
A quick synopsis for you guys. In this episode, Ned helps Bigfoot defeat an undead bobcat and they hightail it to the lodge. Mama and Aubrey take a walk in the woods.
Just real quick, are you sure they don't cattail it to the lodge?
Boy, that's real bad.
All right, well, it's in now.
Wait, isn't like a cattail, like a separate, like a...
Yeah, it's a reed.
Reed?
Yeah, but like...
But that's not a form of travel. You don't travel via reed.
Not yet.
Well, we aren't into the zone of postulation yet.
Yeah, all right, we'll get there at the end. I got some reed thoughts.
Mama and Aubrey take a walk in the woods, and Duck visits Sylvain and makes a furry friend. The parties convene at the gate, and with our heroes finally together, they get the first taste of combat as they confront a monster.
I cast Zone of Truth.
All right, I'll fess up. Griffin has said they're going to do 4 or 5 episodes. I've been holding out, saying he'd do 8 to 12. Seems like I'm wrong. Gonna keep it to a tight 5, they say. Could be interesting.
We will see.
Yeah.
I'm not yet convinced.
But I'll fess up to being called out as wrong right now.
But you may retract it later.
Well, you know, my states of being wrongness can being in wrongness can vary. I'll stand here in my wrongness right now and be wrong.
Okay.
Well, and then next week, yeah, listen, you don't get to say that. I'll say that to me.
Well, all right.
Next week, I'll be maybe less wrong.
All right. Well, I said Aubrey and Ned would meet up in the lodge and they'd have to go into this other world to save Doc. And they would all come back and fight the monster. Didn't quite happen that way. Duck got back on his own, sort of. But they did meet up in the woods by the gate, so I'm claiming that one. And they are fighting a monster, so I'm claiming that one, too.
I'll give you an asterisk.
I'll take it.
And I predicted that the sort of part of the town that's anti-cryptozoological are actually these cryptozoological beings. That has not yet come to fruition, so it's a question mark on my prediction. But I'm going to count it as a win because it did not happen either, so I think that's fair.
I don't think that's how Zone of Truth works.
This is like a win by omission, which I guess is fine, but maybe we just need to make very specific predictions in the future.
Yeah, or like, define the rules of the Zone of Truth.
Yeah.
Where's your player's handbook?
Well, it's upstairs. So...
That's too much work.
Yeah, it's awful far away.
Agreed. That's... Yeah.
So, we're less wrong this week, I think. And we're getting into the meat of it. Finally, they're together. Our three heroes have joined forces eventually.
At long last.
At long last. We'll set this up now. Colin has lots of thoughts. Chris has thoughts, but also... kind of fell asleep in the middle of the episode because it was a very busy week at work, so his thoughts are somewhat muddled. And Jake...
I liked it. I thought it was a good episode.
That's his only thought.
That's it. So that's it. Jake's part of the episode is now over. We'll see him in about 45 minutes for the out. Colin, yeah. Take us home.
Well, let's start at the beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
Nice work, guys. Nice work.
You're welcome.
Does Griffin... have any idea how big an actual bobcat is?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, Kind of took the wind out of my sails there, guys.
Well, I mean, it's, you know,
well, you asked a question, we gave an answer.
This is a perfect information kind of question based on what he said. No, he doesn't.
Yeah, I just don't say the average bobcat's like 20 pounds. Stacked up against a 7 foot plus Sasquatch, a bobcat is not winning.
Now, for the record, how big is a sack of flour? 5 pounds, right? Or 1 pound. When you buy flour at the grocery store, how big is that?
5 pounds.
5 pounds.
5 pounds.
So a bobcat is 4 sacks of flour.
I believe it is 1 bobcat.
Right, but so, oh boy, welcome to our first tangent. So when you buy bags from Timbuktu, they measure them in the number of rolls of toilet paper you can fit inside it. So I was trying to measure my bobcats by the number of bags of flour that would occupy the same volume.
According to Wikipedia,
4.
Well, according to Wikipedia, they range from 14 to 40 pounds. So that would be 8 bags of flour.
We've arrived at my first question of the podcast.
However, that is weight, not volume.
Right, right. So my first question of the podcast, though, is do you think you're better than us? Because you did research.
I mean, it's Wikipedia.
So yes.
So defo.
Defo. Defo better than us.
Oh, for sure. It was either that or do actual work.
None of us do that.
No, actual work.
I probably shouldn't put that on the record.
They'll never find it. Yeah. I mean, I'll grant...
Also, it was done on a Sunday, so I don't feel that bad.
It's fine. I'll grant Griffin that if you want to have a face-off between a mystical monster, vaguely humanoid monster, and a cat, it'd be hard to predict who would win.
No, it wouldn't.
No, I mean, what do we have for stats on Bigfoot's agility or strength?
Doesn't matter. Strength, he's got to have at least a +2 modifier.
Griffin said he was over 7 feet tall, which means you can put him 300 plus pounds against a 20-pound cat.
A very angry, slightly evil undead cat.
I don't think it matters.
Is it angry or is it just dead and like annoyed that it's dead?
You think it's angry because it's dead?
No.
Well,
Jake does. I think it's annoyed that it's dead and just kind of like around sometimes.
I mean, I don't think it has full capacity over its actions. I don't think it's making any decisions for itself. I'm just saying
that's a great question. Let's go from there.
Is happening to these animals?
Yeah, that's the segue I was going for and then missed it.
Yeah, which is really cool because I was just about to kill this bit because we totally lost the thread, but you guys found it. That's great.
I found it. It's here. It's in our Bobcats Weekly. The other podcast we've invented while attempting to record this one.
I did a lot of research about bobcats, right? It has to go somewhere.
What's their typical geographic area?
It will range.
What are the primary exports of bobcat land?
Of bobcat land? It's actually small personal tractors.
Wow. You got me there. You got me good. Woo!
Okay, so what do we think is happening to the animals?
Yeah, so I think we're finally arriving at a stage where we can build like real theories and not just what the fuck is this one person going to do. So there is, based on the evidence we've been given, and we can dive into this more granularly later, there's some evil force that exists coming out of the Sylvain, and it manifests as what they call the Abomination in our world. And Barclay describes it as part of the Abomination. So it seems like there's some evil entity that seeps in and begins to absorb Earth plane creatures and bend them, maybe not to its will, but bend them towards evil against their like natural state.
Well, I mean, I think it's established that these creatures are dead, right? So it's not even... Like, I feel like bending is almost too kind a word. It's like over... It's almost like, you know, like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, they're inhabited. Like, it's a shell. It's not a... It's not a bobcat anymore.
Right. It's a...
It's that thing that's housed in a dead bobcat.
Right.
Which would weigh approximately 20 pounds.
Just give or take.
Approximately. So yeah, I mean, I would agree with that whatever this abomination, this giant monster with many eyes that Duck has seen, is somehow infecting these other animals and creating a sort of uprising.
See, and I would think that there's probably even a level above it.
Yeah.
Like, the abomination... So...
The patchwork bear, I do not think, is the abomination.
No, but that's not... That, I think that is another example of the abomination sort of bringing people into its power. The abomination is what I believe... Well, I guess it'd be the same thing, wouldn't they?
Yeah, the thing with many eyes is the bear.
Right. Yeah, I got that now. There, I'm with you. I kind of hope there isn't a thing above it, though, because...
A thing above the bear?
Yeah.
A sentient entity above the bear? As opposed to just, like, an evil ooze that comes through the gate?
So I think
a la Ghostbusters 2.
I think story-wise, it would be good to have something above the bear... in a season, in a mini arc,
we don't need to tackle anything larger than just kill the bear.
Yeah, I'm already, and we'll get into this more later, I'm already pretty frustrated with the scope of this arc, because I think it's adding a lot more than it needs to for what it's supposed to be.
Do you think the bear is the monster that they're hunting?
At this point, I hope so, and I would hope that this patchwork bear thing, like, this isn't the final fight.
That it's going to, you know, somehow scamper through the gate or something, and then episode 5 come back and be the real fight.
Right. Or just go back into the woods and, you know, add a couple bears and deer and...
Try again.
Yeah, exactly. He's get bigger and better. And
Voltron.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, because Griffin did say that the way the game is designed is you have to be able to discover the monster's weakness in order to defeat it. And there hasn't been any time for them to really research anything that's going on about the abomination or the bear itself or anything like that to, like, know that fire magic or whatever might be what it's weak to.
You know, and knowing that Duck's artifact is in the Cryptonomicon, and like, there are a lot of layers left to this to unravel.
Yeah, and I think that's what frustrates me is what is the point of these mini arcs?
Yeah.
Is it to see if the mechanics and the structure will work for a longer season, or is it to see if the game master can build a world within the system? Because I think the world building can really be done in any system. And so the fact that it took 2 episodes and 52 minutes to get to the first fight to see how those mechanics work for the players and work for the podcast just doesn't make any sense to me. Right. I think it's so much deeper than it needs to be for a 5-6 episode arc.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if... I would assume that what they're testing out is systems more than scenarios. I think it would be very strange if they run through this and be like, oh, commitment was awesome. Let's go back to the commitment world and launch a full season there. I think that could feel very strange.
Right.
As opposed to season 2 being something completely unique just based on the Fate system versus D&D versus whatever.
Agreed. So I think if they wanted to use Monster of the Week system, I think it would work. But I don't think you needed to have all of this story to prove that out. I think you want to test the system, and I don't think they've done that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially... So this episode of ours gets a little weird because we're finally able to go on broader themes rather than just going segment by segment by segment. So I'm going to jump forwards, if I may, to the very end where we talk about combat. Because I was very disappointed by how combat played out. If only because Griffin's lead into it was, he gave direction to the guys to take actions that were narratively valuable,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to putting value on what's most effective against the monster, what they think would be cool for themselves, like anything other than that. It's that all of this is in service of the story.
Right.
Which I think can be good, but for the first time trying out the arc, I think they need to be able to do it in the way that they approach that, like...
Whatever they think is best for them and their character.
Yeah, whatever they think is best for them and their character, or to approach it by what their instinct is, and then be able to use their instincts to determine if the system fits what they want to be doing.
Right.
I think if it starts with take an action that you think fits the narrative and works within the way that, the system works, it is already putting limits on it.
Yeah.
Which seems strange.
Yeah, and I don't know why you would stress the story in a 4-episode arc or 5-episode arc.
And I also think like the three of them are good enough at putting together narration on their own that they don't need that cue.
Right.
The fact that they don't have initiative to set turn order, the three of them can figure it out. They've gotten pretty good at improvising, especially as that trio, to make a thing happen. I'm not particularly worried about the three of them putting together a good consecutive set of turns to do something cool.
Right. Agreed.
And I don't know that I should go and I should read the rules more to see, because I was sort of surprised that things like Aubrey throwing the lantern didn't require a roll.
So that's something I had a problem with, and I'm glad you mentioned that. I had a problem with the way Griffin was GMing.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ned throws the walking stick to Duck. No roll necessary. It just happens. I get it. Aubrey flings an oil lantern at the monster. No roll needed. That one I'm a little iffy on. Duck runs behind the gate and starts yelling. Well, you better make a roll for that one.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't track to me.
Right.
I guess maybe it's because they're engaging the monster.
But again, it's not
that. Certainly Aubrey was engaging the monster.
Yeah. And I think more to that point, the skill that Aubrey would have to hit to like wield a lantern, which is not a typical projectile, and get it to land where it needs to, is more skill than Duck standing still and yelling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah. Because if you're rolling for how it affects the monster, that's not Duck's roll. That's the monster. That's a contest roll,
right?
Which doesn't exist in this system, which is fine. But I think there's a weird line to be drawn then there, because if you don't have contests, like, does the monster just always follow the will of the player?
Well, I think if he had, I understand making Duck roll because he is engaging the monster. And so that if he had failed, the monster would not have listened and would have gone after Ned or something.
But what would the concept, like, the way they framed it, and again, I should know more about the rules to be able to speak more knowledgeably, but the way they framed it is that when you fail a roll, it has dire consequences. There do not seem to be great dire consequences to Ned failing to attract the monster's attention, except consequences that befall other people. And well, so it becomes a role of the party, not of...
Well, maybe, but maybe...
Duck by himself.
I think it's possible that the monster doesn't hit the gate, instead, like, runs through it, and the gate hasn't been activated, and it gores Ned.
Yeah.
Sorry, not Ned, Duck.
Right.
So I could see that, and I kind of get Duck is engaging the monster, so you have to do a roll, because that's the only way you can tell if there are going to be negative consequences to it. I don't get how that doesn't apply to Aubrey.
Yeah, no. I mean, at the very least, that's a... What is it? Act under pressure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, you know...
Because, yeah, you throw that lantern and catches the forest on fire. Like, there are...
And especially for the narrative, that's such an easy way to see the forking path of how this goes. Like,
yeah.
Great success. Hits the monster in the face. Everything's on fire. Mixed success. The lantern flies out of your hand and it goes off to the woods. Terrible success. You misjudge the throw, it goes over the monster and it hits Duck in the face and Duck's on fire. Like, that's a very easy forking in those three trajectories as opposed to, like, Duck yelling at the monster.
Right. So I don't know if that's a... I don't have that as an issue with the system. I have that as an issue with...
Their interpretation of the system. Griffin's interpretation of the system.
Yeah, the GMing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Travis was ready to roll. You could hear the D6s in his hand.
Well, I think that's the trick of it, is when if the I think if the player characters can sense that this is a thing that should be challenged, like this is an ability check, I think that should be an indication that we are at a place where the system should kick in and tell them how successful they are.
Yeah.
Sorry, y'all.
Agreed. Something else with that in that fight I wanted to ask you guys about is Duck gets hurt twice with 2 episodes of 3 harm from the antlers.
Right.
Does it feel to you guys like Griffin is upping the damage those things do just so that they would affect Duck?
Like there was supposed to be 1 and now it's 3?
Yeah, because he has that plus two armor, and so now it's his automatically three.
I think...
if that were to hit Aubrey, that's almost half of her life force.
And I think... And so I don't feel that it's artificial. Because if a giant bear with antlers charges into little old Aubrey, she's going to get hurt.
But that's not what happened to Duck.
No. And
the thing charged into the gate and an antler hit him or pierced him, I just don't feel like it would be...
I think as a characterization, as a grazing blow kind of deal, I think it is too high given the constraints of the system.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
Same, because the second time he takes harm, it's as the result of his attack on the monster, right?
Right.
Which he hits it on the head and it goes... So I get that more, but again, three harm does seem very high. I think the attack by the gate bothers me more. That seemed high, but it seems like the system doesn't have any scale for that necessarily. Like,
no, and I think you could have just made the negative consequence different. Like, it hits you for two harm, which does no damage to Duck, and the oil lantern goes flying out of your hand and crashes into the forest.
Right. Yeah. There are probably better mechanics to use there. As a side consequence, as opposed to just damage.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
Yeah. So, I'm sure we could talk about combat for a while, though I'll be curious to see how it plays out later, since we don't actually resolve the combat.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But let's talk about the story setup a little more, because I think we're going to have to get into what Sylvain means for a while at the tail end of this episode. We have Duck going through the gate, which we'll lump it with Sylvain. And then we have Ned and Barclay and Aubrey and Mama. The Aubrey and Mama bit I enjoy for the most part, except that Aubrey is starting to get on my nerves in a weird... Travis is playing her as so much more grounded and, like, okay with magic than I imagine a character would be in that scenario. The speed with which Aubrey has adjusted to being a magic user and being surrounded by sort of oddities struck me as odd. Last episode, I was like, yeah, sure. Like, if she's a magician, like, maybe that's fine. But the way she sort of just jumped into it and, like, everything's cool, like, nothing phases her is very, very strange.
Totally agreed. I think Ned's car comes careening in, and they step out, and then she, hi.
Yeah.
What? You're a young person who's not freaked out at any of this?
Right. Like, I imagine Ned in character jumping backwards if a car comes through the woods and crashes next to him. Like, why would not Aubrey play the same way? Which tracks with sort of like unfazed by having a gun pointed at her, unfazed by monsters appearing in the world. It just seems like too strong of a choice, perhaps.
One thing I thought was interesting that, so I've kind of started to accept that that's just how Travis is going to play her. But when they were walking through the woods, Mama swears her to secrecy and, she swears on the life of Dr. Hirschbacher's PhD, which I thought was an interesting choice that she says, she's basically saying, if I tell anybody about Sylvain, you can kill my rabbit, which doesn't feel like it's true to the character either.
Well, I think it's more taking it in the way, like, it's colloquially used. Like, I swear on the life of my mother. Like, no one is meaning that if I break this... I don't think anyone literally means if you break this, you could kill my mom.
I think
this is like, my mom is my most important person to me, so therefore I take this very highly. Like, Dr. Harris Bonkers is the most important person to me. I got this. Don't worry about it.
I mean, I guess that makes sense, and I'm just a person who would never swear on the life of my mother, because that's ridiculous to me.
Who is the most important person to you that you would swear your life on? Like, start working down a list.
I mean, it's probably one of us. He would probably get rid of one of us.
And I'm sorry for you, but it's going to be you.
Yeah, it's going to be me. He's going to get rid of me.
No, I would never swear on anybody else's life but my own.
I've seen your life.
Well,
yikes.
But that's exactly what I mean. Like, I wouldn't never, considering the, like, to me, it would never occur to me to take that sort of assumption of power over somebody's life. Especially for somebody you hold in very high regard, as she appears to hold her rabbit. And maybe that's, you know, people do say, I swear on the life of my mother or whatever. I just never would do that with anybody. I might swear on my life, but that's it. Or the life of somebody that's already dead. I might do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's a nice little catch you got there. I like it.
Yeah, well, it's a nice out.
Yeah, I think...
So it sounds like that's not as big of a deal to anybody else but me.
No, I don't care. That line didn't faze me at all. I will say I was struck by the speed with which Mama came to trust Aubrey. We just, like, strangely work our way backwards through the episode.
I mean, I think that's fine. Like, it all blends together, and we still don't have an established chronology. Because,
It all happens on the same night.
Right. I'm mostly...
Yes, but...
Yeah. I'm mostly referencing when Mama and Barkley go through the gate, and Mama says...
Oh, yeah,
says,
hey, you watch these guys.
Right, watch our back. Like, what?
Okay, so one of my big issues with this episode, which I think is mostly born of trying to wrap it up in a couple... the arc up in a couple episodes, is the fact that these non-playable characters, these NPCs, trust way too readily. You've got Mama trusting Aubrey, not only with the two strange men she doesn't know in the forest.
Yeah.
But with the knowledge of the gate at all. There is no reason Aubrey would have to know at this point.
What do you mean?
Aubrey doesn't have to know about the gate. So she knows about magic. She knows about these...
Oh, okay. I follow.
These...
other worldly beings.
Right. She doesn't need to know about the gate and about Sylvain. Similarly, Vincent the Goatman, which we haven't touched on yet, but he trusts Duck to just... You're not going to tell anybody, right? And then they shake hands on it and he lets him back into Kepler?
Yeah, especially given the tensions that everyone has hinted at between Sylvain and our world.
Yeah. So, like, how is that the response?
Yeah.
Especially when the reason Duck could see the gate, he asked, how could you see the gate? You shouldn't be able to see. He goes, well, you know, a spirit vision told me. Vince is like, yep, that tracks. I guess you're free to go. Like, who would buy that? I can't suspend my disbelief for that. If I ask somebody, how did you learn about this? Oh, well, you know, a spirit person told me. I'm not going to believe that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Even if it is true, I would not believe it.
Well, and I think it's easy to chalk a lot of it up to the speed with which they need to move through these points.
Right, but that gets back to my earlier point where there's no reason to make the story this deep for such a short arc.
Yeah, no, and so that was my big problem with the episode, was I think there are ways to have handled the story without Sylvain at all.
Yeah,
agreed. And like, there is so much depth there to the world and now we have an infinite number of questions that just aren't going to be answered. Right. And so I think that cycles back to this idea of, well, is this going to, like, do they want this, does Griffin want this to be the starting place of season two? If that's his,
if it's
that decision.
If so, save it for season two.
I agree. Right.
I think, I see this playing out as sort of a, if they want to do this as a setup for season two, the episodes play out as the three characters have their vignettes, they arrive in Kepler, they meet Mama, they encounter some trouble with a bear, Mama says, please go handle this, they fight the bear, they come back, and in the fighting of the bear, they discover the gate, you know, end scene. That's the cliffhanger for season 2.
Yeah, cut to black.
Yeah, no, season 2. That's where, when season 2 kicks off, they pick up with, like, going to Sylvain and learning, like, doing effectively, like, a training montage, and then coming back as monster hunters and doing it for real, and it's going to be a fucking kick-ass season, and I want that to happen very, very much.
Season 2 opens, bright white screen, so, like, to mirror the fade out, you fade in. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
So that is one thing that I guess I have really appreciated is... Griffin is doing a much better job of, or I won't say better, Griffin's doing a really good job of describing this like it were a TV show. And so I think that's helpful from a listener perspective to like visualize some of these things. And the way that Colin's looking at me says that he disagrees.
No, I think you're right that he does, but it also, the way he's describing it leads me to believe that these characters don't really have a lot of agency. It's kind of reminds me of like those Telltale games.
Mm-hmm. So which kind of on rails.
Yeah, where it's, they've gotten this reputation, fairly or unfairly, that you can choose the dialogue, you can choose how you're going to respond, but what's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling I'm getting. That, I mean, it feels even more restrictive than the Crystal Kingdom arc of Balance, which was the most traditional dungeon type place that that arc ever went. And it feels more restrictive than that.
Yeah, well, Well, I would chalk that up to the NPCs playing such a large role in how characters advance.
That's probably true.
I was trying to think back on Commitment a bit more and thinking of if we had been doing this during Commitment, what would we be saying about sort of character agency and how the story was progressing and how it would become season two. And I think Clint wrote a much more concise... This will be five arcs. This will be five episodes, and it will only be five episodes kind of deal. And so I think it fast-forwarded through a lot of it, but it was so much more combat-heavy, much more puzzle-solving-heavy that I think we got a bit more experience in the system. Mm-hmm. We got a bit more experience with how the characters would move around the world. You know, we sort of outlined some of our issues with the unnecessary character building at the front end, but I could, at this point, see Commitment being a better season two in terms of the openness of the world than Amnesty.
So for the mini arcs, I always thought Commitment was too wide, and I think Amnesty is too deep for a mini arc to test the system. I'm very excited to see what comes next, like what the next mini arcs are. And I don't know that I love the fate system for season two. Mm-hmm. I had some issues with it.
Yeah. Can we just play D&D?
Yeah. I thought D&D worked pretty well. And I honestly liked the rolling of Travis adding up like...
A lot.
Yeah.
This is my second attack.
I did 96 damage. So what the...
I would imagine that the trick that they... The trouble they have with D&D is that moving it to a world outside of sort of the fantasy realm becomes very complicated. Like, if they wanted to do this arc in D&D, I think that would be kind of tricky.
I would agree, but I kind of also like that. Like, I don't need a podcast that is based... a narrative podcast that's based heavily in the real world...
Yeah,
because like there are enough documentaries and movies that are based in the real world, to you know, sate any of that. Like I think there's a asset in being based in a fantasy world.
Yeah, even in a present setting.
Or I mean, you know, this stopped being an actual play podcast a long time ago.
Yeah.
So take whatever liberties you need to with D&D.
Yeah.
To make it suit your system.
Well, and I think they did.
Oh, right, yeah. Like, I mean, you know, and so I think, you know, sure, it would take some work to figure out, but based on the work that they've put into it, it seems like the kind of thing that they might enjoy to do anyway.
Yeah, and it. So I was sort of looking at the cover art the other day, and it looks like we have a sort of detective minisode coming and a sci-fi minisode coming. And so thinking about those... there are opportunities, I think, to put the D&D system on top of a detective sort of Sherlock Holmes or whatever they're going to do kind of deal for it. I think putting it in a sci-fi world becomes a little bit trickier when you have to layer on top like technical knowledge and things of that nature. I do.
There's also a casino, or adding maybe a Western one.
Yeah, those look like gun shells. So I'd say Western.
Yeah, I think it's Western. I'm very excited for that one.
So we have a couple of them coming. I'm struggling to remember what the system was that Friends at the Table worked on for the counterweight segment. Which I'm going to look up right now. Because I think that I would be curious to see if they explore that system at all. Especially as a narrative tool, the basic mechanic of it is you add, as an action, you're adding adjectives to different things to describe what effect you're having on them. So, like, you're trying to put the adjective of broken onto a starship or something like that. And,
I mean, that sounds vaguely like they were talking with the Fate system during Commitment. And I don't know that they ever really got to that point.
Yeah.
Because I think it was interesting. There were parts of that system, and Griffin even mentioned at the end where he said, I don't think Fate is right for the Adventure Zone. They said that there were all these things that they didn't really do. They have these effects of where, I forget, the character hurts his ankle in the final scene and now he can't move as fast because he has an adjective of hurt or crippled or something attached to it.
Right.
But they never really got to explore that for whatever reason.
So we've gone kind of far afield. I think these are all valid points and interesting discussion, but let's try to rein it back into what happened.
Yeah, we need to finish our episode discussion for or not.
No,
or
we do. We
or
do.
You don't? You
we
don't.
Do.
We do.
I've got another question for you. Well, sort of a question that's really...
I got a deal for you!
It's really just my opinion in the form of a question.
So you're just going to...
Every academic concert...
Right.
Concert.
Yeah.
Concert. Concert works.
Yeah. Academic concerts are weird. They're kind of like boring.
Yeah, like it's a lot of spoken word.
Would you consider your dissertation defense an academic concert?
He did do guitar riffs, so...
And he hasn't done it yet.
I realized that happened, like, as soon as I said did it, I was like, oh,
he's
boy,
gonna
fuck he's that
gonna,
up.
He's gonna done do it.
Yeah, he's gonna get it done.
So, but, like, is a dissertation defense an academic concert?
Yeah, basically.
Nice. Like, I am calling it that from now on.
There's lots an audience and...
I mean, lots of guitar riffs.
You perform, yeah.
You basically have a solo the whole
time. Isn't that like a TED Talk?
Pretty much, yeah.
You know? Like,
I feel like TED Talks are more like jazz, a little more free.
That could still be a concert,
but they're not academic.
Well, I mean, sort of they are, some of them. Anyway,
you had a question for us,
sort of,
or a statement you wanted us to react to.
Okay, so yeah, it's more of that. Mama and Aubrey are at the gate. Ned and Barclay are at the gate. And
accurate.
Duck comes out of the gate.
Yes. All these things definitely happened.
Mama's first reaction is, boy, me and Barclay better go back through the gate, leaving Aubrey here with these two men that Mama doesn't know Duck at all and only knows Ned, I presume, through reputation, maybe a chance encounter or two.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the world is her reaction... to take the only person she trusts with her back through the gate?
Well.
Or should trust. Because she clearly trusts Aubrey, but as we said earlier.
Based on the conversation with Vincent, it seems like the tenuous peace between the worlds might lead to her very quickly going to, like, worst case scenario, I need to go avert war. And therefore, we need to go and do this.
A practical consideration might be because Vincent is of that world, he's not going to... We don't know if Mama's magical.
Sure.
So having someone there who might be able to keep her grounded long enough to provide support so she doesn't lose her shit might be meaningful.
And loosely speaking, like, as long as they're all on this side of the gate, there's not as much damage they could do.
Well, so two alternatives that I would offer is A, this we haven't talked about, but this is how I kind of took it, is that...
A, he hadn't considered my point, and it was awesome, and now he's rethinking his life.
Mm-hmm. No, that she could take something of Barclay's that is from Sylvain and wear it like the bracelet, which I imagine is what keeps him in his human form, and leave Sasquatch over on this side of the gate to keep track of the two guys that she doesn't know and make sure things are good. Or B, go back to the lodge. Whatever diplomatic snafu Duck had over there isn't going to go away overnight. Go back to the lodge and have these people in a controlled place where you can learn if you can trust them. Instead of just leaving out there with a girl who's late teens to early 20s that you're trusting to protect the gate from these two 40, 50-something-year-old guys. Like, that's just a horrible decision on Mama's part. And I don't get it.
I can't argue with you. Yeah, that's probably right. It does seem like maybe a question of Duck might have been appropriate. Of like, hey, how'd that go? Or, did you talk to anybody over there?
Yeah, just, who are you? Come back with me to the lodge, and you're going to do it, because I got freaking Sasquatch, like,
And Fire Girl.
Yeah, yeah, and then question him there, see how it went. And that way, when you're going to talk to Vincent, you're not just completely knowledgeless of what transpired.
I wonder if next episode we'll get to see any of what happens to Mama on the other side, if Griffin's going to give us an all NPC vignette.
Those were some of my favorite parts of Balance, where Griffin's just fighting or talking to himself.
Yeah, Griffin just talks to himself for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be into it. Like, they're fighting a bear, and then there's like a little powwow happening in Sylvain.
I hope it's like tea and crumpets, like something really the exact opposite of fighting a patchwork bear.
Just to get that good side-by-side for when the comic book comes out.
Exactly.
Yes, agreed. Mama doesn't seem to make the best decisions.
Yeah, I'm really questioning why they put her in charge of keeping the gate safe.
Which, again, there was certainly a reason.
Yeah.
But now we have to know. If we hadn't introduced Sylvain at all.
Yeah.
And this was just a monster that. There are monsters, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Like.
And I think if you're going to test the system, you just get the three characters together and you fight a monster. You don't need the lodge. You don't need Mama. You don't need. I mean, Mama would certainly help, but you don't need Bigfoot and everybody else.
Yeah.
You just get them together and you fight a monster.
Right. You have two episodes of each of them finding some clue
right.
that leads them to the same place, an episode of them tracking it together, and then the big boss battle. And then end of arc. Yeah.
And you can tell if it works or not.
Right. Well, and I think this is just sort of an endemic thing of the breadth versus depth. Like, Griffin clearly has plans in place that don't need to exist.
Right. And I wonder if it's one of those, I forget the saying in literature or art in general, like,
kill your darlings.
Yes, thank you. Kill your darlings. It's not kill your babies.
That's bad. Very different. Very different.
Maybe we've seen it the way our creative writing teacher taught us. Maybe he said, anyway. But yeah, kill your darlings. It's a great idea. It would make a great backdrop for season two. But you don't need it in the test of the system. It's just too much. Because now it feels so cheapened by the fact that all of this is happening in very few episodes. It's like when a show knows it's going to get canceled.
And they just start wrapping up plot lines.
And they just rush through the plot in two episodes. And you're just like, wow, that was nothing.
Underwhelming.
Yeah, exactly.
If we're talking about other issues with the plot, I would be curious to talk a little bit more about Aubrey's handling of magic, just briefly. Because I do struggle with her, and this is sort of going on a tangent, I suppose, but, whatever.
Being comfortable with it immediately?
Yeah, the flippancy with which she uses magic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny, I think it's cool, but it, especially with, how frequently they've referenced the Dresden Files and how Dresden holds a pretty high regard for magic use and reserves it for situations where he needs to. Like, he frequently will default to picking locks by hand or just, like, hitting stuff.
I mean, I think they only referenced it once. We reference it a lot.
Yeah. That's fair. But it's they... I'm including them in the episode and on Twitter. And I know Travis has talked about it on Twitter a fair bit.
Okay, absolutely.
So, I would just like to lodge that as a complaint.
Yeah, the fact that she was so freaked out by it and then she's just walking in the forest. You know, I love the idea of her just creating a flame on her thumb. Yeah.
Go on.
Hades and Hercules?
That's, okay.
It happens in that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he even lights a cigar with it, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure he went. I was trying to remember if... Well, now I'm just going to prove that I don't know. If it was Hades or Greek name or Roman name?
It was definitely Hades.
I forget the name, like what his other name is.
Yeah.
Like for as like a the Roman pantheon?
Yeah.
That'll be on next week's episode in the Zone of Truth.
Yeah. So I totally agree that I love the idea, but it feels like somebody who was... And I could see her experimenting with it as they walked, but she wouldn't be that accustomed to it
yet. Especially when for those moments, we're effectively experiencing them in real time.
Right.
There's not a lot of...
Beep. Beep. Beep.
Oof.
Beep.
A 24 version... Like, that could be something. I take it back, it'd be bad. They should not do a 24 version.
Agreed.
Where it's like, I walk to the forest, and then they just are all silent for a little while. Like, that's about how long a forest walk would take. And then we go on.
One thing we haven't really talked about yet is this, what your thoughts are on Sylvain.
Unnecessary.
Fair.
I'm so intrigued.
And I mean the scenes in Sylvain, too.
Oh, the scenes in Sylvain. I guess that's a different point. Again, I'll say, I'm really intrigued by it, and I would love to know more, and I'm disappointed to know that if Griffin's plan follows through, and we do really only have one or two more episodes, that we're not going to get the kind of story that he clearly has written.
Yeah. I mean, and I think more specifically, the scene with Duck and Vincent is just kind of weird to me. I appreciate it for the exposition that needed to get through. But again, I think Jake's absolutely right. Like, it doesn't need to exist. We don't need that scene for any reason. Except to build up a larger story.
That's not there.
That's not there. And like, humans going to Sylvain get angry for no reason only sets up a plot where there are humans in Sylvain and they don't know about the stuff, and then Duck has to get them a thing. Like, all it sets up is a different plot line than the one we're currently experiencing. And the end to the Duck and Vincent scene seemed so ridiculously abrupt that I literally didn't understand when he walked out of the gate.
Right.
It was like, there's got to be another bit where they, like, he takes back the scarf.
Yeah.
And that's like, there's a scene there where he takes back the scarf and he gets mad and has to push him through the gate really quick before he hits him or something. Like, there's a bit.
Yeah. Plus, let's not forget that at the beginning of that scene, it is established that Duck's arms are bound to a chair.
Right.
And then he then shakes Vincent's hands, which would be super obvious. You know, you gotta, like, because you're still tied to the chair.
Yeah.
It makes it very awkward.
And so, I know you're being pedantic here.
Me?
But I thought that whole segment was weird, because we're entering into this fantasy world, yet here's the cop office out of any crime procedural, right? So, and again, that just adds further questions as to what kind of world is on the over here, and why does it matter with this back and forth? But and
when he first gets to Sylvain, this really annoyed me, is he's describing the effects that it's having on Duck and what he's seeing, and Duck can do nothing, because just immediately Griffin removes him from that.
Yeah.
Scene. He goes, and they come at you and they're all over you, and now you wake up and you're in a room with this
guy. And I accepted that as narration. The problem I had with it was that I accepted Duck's lack of agency in that moment. What I had trouble with was the amount of descriptors we got based on the limited amount of time Duck would have been conscious.
Right.
Invisible. Like, if it had happened as fast as they're describing, and I'm imagining like a Stargate kind of situation, like you fall out of the Stargate and some gold roll up and hit you in the face with a staff. Like, you don't have time to process that there's a far off city and there's a sun and there's all these other things in the world.
We never talked about Stargate before.
Well,
I love Stargate.
I work like we as friends or we as this podcast?
Oh, no. We as Chris and Jake.
Oh, I don't know. The second answer is because we're only 2 hours and 56 minutes into talking about this podcast. So Stargate, probably about right that it came up right now.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Please tell me that includes the previous two episodes.
Yes, it does. This is not a 3-hour episode.
Oh, thank God. Real concern there for a second.
Though stay tuned for our Stargate fan cast, where we only cover Stargate Infinity, the one where they're on the ship that can't get home, and none of the other ones.
So I never watched that one.
Oh, it's...
Well, if you say it's the best one, I'm going to stab you, because it has to be SG-1.
It's not the best one. It definitely exists, though.
I haven't seen any of them.
Well, that's fine.
That's fine. Okay. You just be over there with your list of questions. Anywhere else you want to take us?
No.
Good talk.
That's all I had.
That's all your bits?
I think, wait a minute, let me check. Yeah, I think I hit all my points.
Okay, then let's head to the zone of postulation, where we'll sort of lay out...
Postulation.
Are we doing that as a bit?
Do you want to... Okay, if you want to do that, it needs to be isolated. So
I already
did
it. I think we can fix it in post.
No, because we were talking over it.
I promise I can't.
I like it. Zone of postulation.
Baseline it. All right. As a prediction, they beat up the bear in the next episode. Actually, no. They don't beat up the bear in the next episode. The bear runs away. Mama and Barclay come back. There's some like weird political nonsense a la Star Wars, the first trilogy. The second trilogy, but the first three episodes. And then they go beat up the bear again. And mini arc.
Who thought it was a good idea to put a trade federation in political dispute? Like, we're going to blockade Naboo.
I mean, possibly Griffin, depending on how this next episode goes.
This cannot be a podcast about episode one.
Can't it?
A long time ago.
I think it's already been done definitively.
See, I'll deviate from your prediction because I think that Barclay will come back, but Mama will not.
Oh, no.
And without their sort of spirit guide quest giver, they'll need to go back in to save her.
Okay.
I think they will beat up the patchwork bear. Mama and Barclay will come back, and they'll all go to the lodge. And then they'll have to find whatever the source of this black ooze is. And then they'll have to defeat that. And somehow that will all only take two episodes.
So there you have it, folks. Some bold predictions. Some broad predictions. Some... we'll just call them predictions. Thanks for listening to We Do That, a Taz Fancast. Check back in next week to see what we got right, what we got wrong, and what we totally forgot to talk about.
In between episodes, contact us at wedothatpod@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at wedothat_pod. Send us your thoughts, ideas, and fan theories.
So we can shamelessly steal them.
New episodes come out every Monday after the Adventure Zone on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you find podcasts. Bye, everybody.